Welcome to the Open Paddock Rallycast. This is episode 25, a look back at the 2017 rally season. This week we are pleased to have with us Jason Anthony, editor for World Rally Blog. We're in a remote location, so if it's a little bit noisy, it's because we're over here at the Stepping Stone Cafe. We'll be talking about WRC and USA rallying from 2017, as well as whatever other stuff comes up to mind. It turns out we're rather kindred spirits, but anyways, this is Open Paddock, the Rallycast, episode 25. I think you'll enjoy this one. Jason Anthony, it's good to finally meet you in person. You, again, are a writer for World Rally Blog. I encourage all of our listeners to go and check out your guys' website. You always write very insightful stuff. We've had many a discussion and or debate on that site. I always appreciate your outlook on things. We were just talking earlier, and I'll splice it in, your background on how you got interested in rally, quite the history. It turns out we have some very similar paths in how we got to following the sport, both with video games and finally finding out that there's stuff that happens near us with rally. Again, I want to say apologize for the background noise a little bit. It's we're at the Stepping Stone restaurant, a little cafe here in Northwest Portland. It is your first time to Portland. You're vacationing here.
Yep.
Thank you so much for reaching out to contact us. We love having you here. Welcome to Portland. What do you think of the city so far?
It's pretty cool. This is my first time out here. Coming from the East Coast, I'm used to things being a little bit more crowded. So when we were driving into the city with my friend and my wife, I'm kind of like, all right, well, where's the city? But it's really nice. It's just a real laid-back, relaxed vibe. We're staying right here in the neighborhood, right kind of around the corner from this cafe. It's great. I'm enjoying it here so far. We got about another day and a half here, so I'm looking forward to kind of getting around and exploring the city a bit.
Well, if you like all kinds of just fusion types of food, that's one thing that they're pretty well known for here. There are more breweries per capita within the city limits than any other city in the world, believe it or not. So if you like a good brew, it's a good place to go. And
all right.
The other thing that's been kind of on the ramp up is distilleries. So basically, if it's a sin food thing, we're all about it.
Right. Nice.
One of my favorites, actually, if you get over to Burnside Distillery, I think it's called, or East Side Distillery.
Okay.
They do a really good whiskey.
Okay.
So definitely one to try.
We'll check that out.
I'm a big fan here. But anyways, we're sitting here. We're having breakfast. Sitting in a little booth. It's just a little hole in the wall place. But I have the Smothered Badass, and let me tell you, this omelet is massive, and I got a pretty big appetite. And it's hard to finish this one. Badass is right. But good food.
Yeah, I went conservative. I just went with the waffles with a side of bacon, so
light.
Yeah, exactly. So it's good to be here.
Excellent. Well, you know, we talked earlier, and you've been also to some WRC events, if I recall.
Yeah, I've been fortunate enough to get to a couple of them. Actually, before I just want to interject one thing about World Rally Blog. So I can't take credit for that site. I'm kind of more of a guest writer contributor. That site is born out of so the guy that runs it, Tom, goes by Tom, Tomislav, and I have no idea how to pronounce his last name. He's from Slovenia. never met the guy in person.
Right.
Strajud. There's a couple of S's and J's, and so I got to give him all the credit for World Rally Blog. I mean, that was, and I actually kind of got into his website and reading his writing, and then I just kind of contacted him and said, hey, like, I'm in Ireland. Do you want someone to write a guest piece? And then we kind of clicked, and since then we've been working together on the site. But I've really been just piggybacking off his success with that site, so I got to give him the credit. I just want to throw that out there before we move forward.
Like I said, it's a great site. Again, both his writings, the stuff that you put on there, has always been really insightful, and it's commentary and opinion, but it's not just a series of facts. You guys really do think about different things going on in the sport, and that's the stuff that we want to read, and it's really good content.
That's awesome.
That's the kind of stuff that we appreciate.
That's awesome. That's good to hear, because that's kind of what we want to do. You know, we we're not out there to be a news website. You know, Autosport does a good job of that. There's guys that are in the service park that know far more than we do. I mean, we're fans, so we're enthusiasts at the end of the day. But if we can add one thing, it's like rally pub talk. You know, so we're not out there to report every news story, but if something kind of piques our interest or it gives us kind of an interesting thought-provoking question or sometimes controversial question,
sure,
we're going to pull the pin on that hand grenade, throw it in there, and see what happens, you know? So that's kind of where what we try to do with World Rally Blog. So, yeah, I'm glad you enjoy it.
Well, so one thing we're going to do is kind of do a little bit of a season review. I read your article that you have up on World Rally Blog where you kind of reviewed your thoughts on 2017, and I kind of want to do our own little kind of review of 2017.
Sounds good.
You've been to some WRC events.
Yep.
You've also been to American events.
Yep.
So we'll kind of do a little bit of both. Let's start with the WRC, though.
Sure.
Like I said, I did read your article on there. One of the things that you know was big for 2017 is we had these new cars, and everybody was fearful. Group B is kind of back because we're going more horsepower. But on the flip side of that, with the changes they did in the chassis of the cars, they were technically safer. They actually built them stronger from a cage standpoint. And this is one thing I keep trying to reiterate to people is the top speeds were actually slower.
Right.
A lot of people don't realize that. When they were on that flat out stage in Sweden that they ended up canceling the second run of, the top speeds were still slower than what the 2016 cars could do because all that downforce
right.
slows you down,
yep.
right? So there's some initial fear of that, but I think the cars, I think they looked good. I thought they performed well. It really required some different driving tactics, I think, to get to wrestle them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very pleased with the direction that the WRC went with those 2017 design concept. What's your opinion?
Yeah, I on most of that I agree with you. I think in terms of looks, the 2000, you know, the previous generation of cars didn't necessarily inspire the imagination too much. In terms of the performance of them, I think for me personally, the best thing about the 2017 cars is the sound. And you do get a sense of that from the TV broadcasts, but until you see them in person, you're not really prepared for the sound. And they do sound awesome. And they use the word aggressive a lot to describe the new spec WRC cars. And I'd have to say that for me personally, the way they're most aggressive is in the sound. So, as far as the performance, I don't get it so much the need for the downforce. I understand that more power and they want them to stay on the road, but the way the cars look in real life, they are so planted that it almost looks like a circuit car. Coming down the stage. So when we were in Mexico, we were lucky enough to be at Rally Mexico this year. We were standing on the inside of a corner, kind of up on a bank, so that kind of came around on the side of kind of a big drop. It was a really cool spot. And as the cars went by, first of all, they are fast, and that's the other thing that's really impressive. But they're almost so fast and so planted that you kind of lose some of the nuance watching them, of the suspension working, of the weight transfer and that kind of stuff. It's just a blur and it's a zoom, and they just zoom by, and it is impressive and it's awe-inspiring in one sense, but if anything, for me, it took a little bit away from what I know rallying as, which is seeing someone dance the car from corner to corner, see that weight transfer, see you know, you think of like you know, the famous film, The Climb Dance.
Oh yes.
Going up, was that Vatanen?
Yes, it is.
Going up Pikes Peak, you know.
Yeah.
For me, that's what.
Was that in a Peugeot 205?
Yeah, modified for Pikes Peak. So, and I think that's lost a little bit with the new cars, just because they're so planted. The suspension is so good. The aero is so good that they just go flying by, and you don't necessarily see until you like watch it on TV and kind of slow it down, see the weight transfer and the nuance of it. I mean, they're impressive, don't get me wrong, but I do miss a little bit of that, seeing the subtleties of the car just because they're so fast.
I mean, that makes perfect sense. I guess they are fans, especially at a sweeping corner like that. Obviously, with your typical hairpins and things like that. I mean, overall speed for a stage, they're definitely faster.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it did kind of jump into the fore, the whole thing about the average speed per stage. All of a sudden people realized there was a rule out there. People didn't know about that before. That's no different for most rallies around the world.
Right.
And people made a big deal about it. Well, I get it. It's not because the average speed really has anything to do with safety in the real world.
Correct.
But it is still something that's governed by insurance companies. Insurance companies use statistics.
It's measurable, right?
Exactly.
You know, yeah.
And so the reality is that if you made, you know, that, the example being that Sweden stage, you know, being so fast, it was actually one of the safer stages.
Just dead straight.
Because there's no turns,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, like, it was actually boring to the drivers.
Yeah.
They didn't care that it was canceled, to be honest. But, yeah, it definitely was a different kind of scenario there. I agree with you, but what I like about the aero bits is it gives at least some sort of engineering and development that the teams can go for. Instead of... this was one of the reasons why they wanted to open up that kind of box area around the car to allow some development room. It was because the cars did look alike, right?
Right.
It wasn't for the badge. If you had a silhouette
right.
of each car, you stood them side by side, you could not really tell the difference.
Yeah.
You honestly couldn't. And so...
And then even take that step further, if you plopped a bunch of R5 cars in front of the silhouettes, they'd look the same too.
They would.
And, you know, and that's... I really hear you there because... And this is a little bit of a rabbit trail I won't go down to, but with R5 being so popular, there wasn't enough to distinguish the previous generation WRC cars, at least visually, from an R5 car.
It's a good point.
You know,
yeah,
so,
except for the aero bits. You know, it basically, all you could have to do is look at the rear wing.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Because, like, is it a big carbon fiber huge thing,
yeah.
or is it just this little tiny,
yeah.
you know, wing in the back?
But other than that...
It looks like it's stuck on almost.
Yeah, but other than that, they basically look the same. So,
yeah.
I hear you about the aero. Yeah, makes sense.
So, I mean, and of course, cars had more power. One of the things that was a concern was safety with that. I, from the very beginning, called bunk on that because when Group B was around, we knew how to make power, but we had crappy tires, crappy brakes, crappy suspension, compared to today, anyways.
Mm-hmm.
So we couldn't harness that power to be safe. Yes, they are more powerful now. And 380 horsepower still isn't huge. Actually, you could almost arguably say trying to maintain more speed through a corner in a lower horsepower car is more dangerous
right.
than having the power in reserve to get you out of trouble.
Right.
So I honestly think the new cars are safer, and there really hasn't been an issue, at least from the car standpoint, that we've had really an issue.
Oh, yeah, I completely agree. And I think the other thing that you know, they've compared these cars to Group B, but one big difference between these cars and Group B is, you know, what killed a lot of drivers in Group B? Yes, it was crashes, but it was fire, you know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, fuel cell technology and fire suppression technology and that kind of stuff, and even fire suits and things like that are so much better now.
Exponentially,
yeah.
Right? Yeah,
and so, you know, when even if these WRC cars were having crashes as big as the Group B cars, they weren't bursting into flames upon impact, you know? So, yeah, I could totally agree with you. In terms of driver safety and the structure of the car, I agree. I don't think safety has to be a huge concern with these new cars just because of the horsepower. I think, once again, it's kind of people looking at, going back to the average speeds, people just can tend to fixate on a number and they see a higher horsepower and, oh, that, you know, it's dangerous, you know? But,
right.
but they're not considering necessarily all the other factors at play.
Yeah,
you know,
I guess one of the downsides, though, because the average speeds is we did see many stages that had a lot of chicanery.
Right. Which, hey, I mean, it's not ideal.
No.
You know, you hear the term Mickey Mouse.
yes.
But, hey, if that's what it takes to be able to see cars like that out in the stages, all right. You know, at the end of the day, fine. I know the drivers don't love it, and I think actually it's not even the top class cars that really struggle with the chicanes. One of my favorite podcasts is, you know, Absolute Rally. I know you're a big listener too, and it's really interesting to hear Tony Simpson, the host of that show, talk about what it's like to go through one of those chicanes, for example, on the Pirelli in Kildare, after all the top class cars have gone through, and he's in the tiny little Group N Ford Fiesta trying to get through this chicane that's really rutted, and the cars further back are getting stuck. So in that sense, yeah, I see the issue with the chicanes, but for the top class cars, I guess it's a necessary evil, and if that's what it takes for the FIA or the insurance, for the events to get the insurance to run these cars, then so be it.
I completely agree. So in your review article that you talked about, the beginning of the season, though, started off kind of on a little bit of a sad note.
Yeah.
Very first stage, Monte Carlo, everybody's excited.
Yeah.
And we have a first incident with the darn spectator.
Yeah. And it was... I'm pausing a bit here because that moment stuck with me for the rest of the season. But it was the worst possible start, for the WRC with this new generation, for the new car. There was so much to get excited about.
Yeah.
The new cars.
VW's gone, so you have a bunch of changes going on. Toyota's coming on.
Yeah. There was, even with Red Bull TV, there was just so much great stuff to get excited about. With Red Bull TV starting their broadcast, and I want to get into that a little bit later.
Yeah.
But and then, the first car, I don't even remember who the first car through was in that stage, but I think Padden was the second car through. And even as the crash was happening, I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, whoa, he's lost it. There's no way he's got that. And I was thinking, oh, wow. So, I mean, how often do you see a crash on live TV? And
right.
In one sense, I was like, all right, well, now we know how hard these cars are to control. In one sense, I was like, wow.
Well, it was just a sheet of ice.
Yeah, it was. And before we knew what happened, it was probably like, wow, actually, this is actually, if you want drama on the very first stage, this is great for the WRC. I have tons of respect for Pat, nothing personal against it, but to see visually how difficult these cars were to handle and have a big drama on the very first stage, my first thought was like, wow, this is already second car in, we're seeing drama in the 2017 season. This is great. And then the stage got delayed, and then you started to wonder what's going on. Like, it didn't look like that bad of a crash. You saw Hayden and John get out of the car.
Right.
You're wondering, why aren't they rolling the car over, getting off the stage? Let's get this thing going again. No big deal. And then news starts to filter through, and then with time, it all kind of became clear what happened. And it was just with all the stuff we just talked about, with people kind of worried about the safety of these cars, all that excitement and everything, just the air was let out of the balloon. It's just absolutely deflating. And it was kind of like the worst fears came true 5 minutes into the season, and it's like, whew, now what? Wow. So we were worried about this, and already you would hope that the first event would go through without any issues, and but so that was something that stuck with me throughout the season, with some of the other issues we saw throughout the season, the spectator issues in Poland, I guess Australia, there were some spectator issues, but that was just a hard, and I think obviously you don't want to dwell on it, but it was a hard thing to shake, and for me personally, it was always there in the back of my mind throughout this season. It did set a tone in some ways. I don't know, what do you take on that?
Having been not just a person that's been a big fan and a follower, but having been an organizer, with Oregon Trail Rally, and constantly trying to be on the lookout for the safety of spectators, there's a reason why we have designated spectator areas only for our events. And this is why.
Yep.
Because you have more control.
Yep.
You have people that can supervise better. Monte Carlo, unfortunately, and with a lot of European events, it is the tradition there, and I love them for it. But they can hike in and kind of view from wherever they want, and it's kind of self-reliance on safety.
Yeah.
Now, granted, there's safety cars that go through. One thing we do with Oregon Trail is we have several safety cars. We have an advanced car. goes in through like an hour before any of the zero cards. So we have a triple zero, a double zero, and then the single zero,
yep.
Then finally competitors. And they're always looking on the lookout, but people can move.
Yep.
And they can get into a dangerous spot. And that guy was up on that hillside, and he climbed down lower,
yeah.
From what it sounds like. And it pains me to see that something like that would happen.
Yeah.
But also on the same side, that he put himself in that situation.
Absolutely.
And I guess I'm kind of torn. I was actually kind of angry at him as much as I shouldn't be, I guess.
Right.
It's a tragic situation. But I was, because of him wanting to get so close, he endangered the whole sport.
Right. Yeah.
And that's frustrating for me. But granted, I'm, you know, several thousand miles away. And,
right.
And, yeah, I just... I'm honestly a fan of designated spectator areas. I mean, they could have 15, 20 designated spectator. I mean, you go through a stage, and you realize the places that are good to view from, places that aren't.
Yeah.
And there's only so many of those.
Yeah.
You've been around the world, you probably see the same thing. And honestly, I think that's a situation maybe we should move towards. I'm probably going to get, you know, lambasted for that. But if you do it right, you can have better coverage of marshalling and whatnot to prevent that kind of thing. And then on top of that, is you need to have good enforcement, meaning that willing to shut a stage down if somebody's in a bad spot.
Yeah. That needs to be the trump card that can be played. You know, that needs to be...
Everybody should have a radio in one of those areas, you know, with the... Because when we do spectator areas, we always have a marshal that has a radio, a ham, at one of those spectator areas, and they can radio to the start and say, hold stage,
yeah.
We got somebody in a bad spot.
Yep.
And they will stop the cars.
Yeah. Yeah, and that needs to be kind of thrown around as a legitimate threat to kind of... I hate to use the word coerce, but coerce people to practice good spectating behavior. I'm with you on that, and I am both in favor and also I'm so torn on designated spectating areas, because for me, part of the joy of rallying is hiking in, getting lost somewhere, kind of finding your way to the stage, and then kind of scoping it out and finding a good safe spot. But then again, I've been watching the sport for, you know, 15 years.
Right.
I know the difference between a safe spot and a non-safe spot. Would I have known that in 2003 when I was first watching the sport as a stupid punk teenager? No way. No right. way. I'd be standing on the outside of a corner. This is so cool. Look at this.
Right.
Getting sprayed with gravel. This right. is awesome, man.
Oh,
you know,
ouch,
so,
yeah.
But it's... So as someone that's kind of a, I don't know, seasoned spectator, rallying, or enthusiast, I like to have the freedom to be able to find my own spot, set up my own picture, whatever. But I think we got to be realistic, and a lot of the people, especially with the 2017 cars and all the excitement and all the hype, a lot of the people that were coming out to these stages had a passion for the sport, and that's what we want to foster, right? We want people to come out, but you can't expect all those people to understand where a rally car might end up in any given situation. So you can't expect these people to necessarily find a safe spot while giving them no direction. You know what I mean? And so that, in that sense, I'm for the designated spectator there. So I'm really torn. I am really torn on that issue. I hear your side, but then I see the other side too. I don't have a good answer. And I think no one has a really good answer, and that's why we don't have an answer yet. You know what I mean? I think that's why this continues to be an issue.
I guess the best answer maybe for them is quite simply more marshals with more authority.
Yeah.
You know, make sure they're radio operated, or it can somehow communicate to somebody that has a radio nearby and being able to take action. So, again, if you know where the more dangerous areas are, and I guess this also kind of goes into the safety stuff for this year. So we had that situation, obviously, which was horrible. We also had in the UK where they came with that fatal accident inquiry from the Jim Clark and the Snowman rallies.
Yeah.
Which a lot of that same kind of discussion that we're kind of having, maybe not the designated spectator areas, but having the organizers specifically look for areas that are riskier for people to stand in and make sure that there's a marshal always there.
Yeah.
I must say the sheriff who went through all of the reports and analyzed all the data for doing that that inquiry, good on him. I thought he took a very pragmatic approach. You know, very makes sense kind of ideas there. Nothing drastic, nothing to kill the sport. It was really just focusing on just how do we keep the sport going but still safe.
Yeah. And I can speak a little bit from personal experience, having been to rallies in Ireland before and after those events in 2014. Ireland and Northern Ireland.
Sure.
So there for me, so I was in the I went to see the 2016 Circuit of Ireland Rally, which is in Northern Ireland. So I think that's governed by the MSA. I'm pretty sure.
You'd think so.
Or is it
Northern Ireland still part of the UK?
Yeah.
Right?
So I think that's MSA is governing that. But regardless, I mean, I think the Irish Motorsport Association and the MSA work pretty closely together, especially when it comes to rallying.
And it probably makes sense because there's a lot of people that compete in both.
Yeah.
So.
But you could see a lot of those measures that were actually recommended in that accident inquiry were already in place, what I saw last year. So they didn't they had designated spectator areas. So in the program, so they released a program with kind of showing these are like the four or five junctions on a stage that are designated. But there were a ton of marshals out there, and they did give you the freedom to kind of walk from one marshal point to the next, but there was always a marshal in sight line looking down the stage. So if anyone...
Wow. Like a lot of marshals.
There were. And that's one of the challenges for these rallies, right, is to find the volunteers to do this. But I was really impressed by the 2016 Circuit of Ireland. It's actually probably the best rally I've been to.
Wow, that's impressive.
And it's a shame that it didn't go off this year, and we'll see what happens in the future. So I thought it was a great event. But I think you could see a lot, like, you could see that the MSA had really been intentional with trying to clean things up and make this better. And I thought the Circuit of Ireland that year did a great job of balancing, hey, you can walk and find your spot, but there's going to be a marshal there, and also the marshals are great. And they were great ambassadors for the sport. Really open, willing to communicate. You know, if someone's in a yellow vest, is going to be a dick and just start screaming at you, you're not going to listen to them, right? Like, so yes, the marshals need to have authority, but there needs to be a mutual respect, too. And I felt like the marshals in the Circuit of Ireland did a great job of towing that balance where... You know, they were great to communicate with. Hey, I want to stand here. Is that okay? Well, no, we don't like you here because this is what might happen. But if you go back behind on top of this berm, it's a pretty close spot. It's almost just as good. And it was kind of a team atmosphere of working together. I can get what I want as a spectator, which is a good spot, and they get what they need, which is a safe stage.
Win-win.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the way it should be. But as we know, it's tough to find volunteers. It's tough for rallies to find funding to do it safely and do it right, and that's why we have the issues we have.
Yep.
So,
agreed. Well, let's get back to some of the more positive stuff.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Get past kind of the tough start that we have.
Yeah.
Media. You mentioned stuff about Red Bull TV. I'll say from my standpoint, I did watch some of it. Unfortunately, one of the things that's frustrating with the Red Bull TV is they don't keep it archived. It's only available for a certain amount of time, and then by the time the next event comes around, or actually just a couple weeks later or whatever, it's no longer available, the full thing. You can see a couple of clips, mm-hmm. but not the full episodes on Red Bull TV anymore. And just with my busy schedule, I was always like a month behind in watching the video coverage, and you know, I might catch the actual WC Plus, which had a little more stage content, because there's a lot more interview and talking kind of going on with Red Bull TV, but... Which was good, but I wanted to get kind of into the meat of it, especially doing podcasts and things like that. And by the time we got around to it, a lot of them weren't available. But you had many a positive thing to say about Red Bull TV.
Yeah, I think it was what the WRC... it's what the WRC needed, but I think it's what it's needed for a long time. I mean, I'm a subscriber to WRC Plus too. You know, the moment that came out, I signed me up. This is awesome. I was, but I think you and I both know. I mean, how long has it been going on for? I think the first season was 2014, maybe.
Something like that.
Yeah.
it become very formulaic. I mean, the formula for WRC Plus has not changed much since 2014.
Right.
And it's good. And in one sense, I'm kind of thinking to myself, why am I complaining? I'm getting to see live stages. I'm getting to see onboards uploaded within a couple hours of the event.
Right.
This is something I would have been dying for 10 years ago. So in one sense, yeah, we're way better off than we were 10 years ago in terms of coverage of the sport. But
let's admit it. Are you as disenfranchised with John Desborough as I am?
Right, yeah. I mean, yeah, and this is nothing against him personally.
No, I'm sure he's a great guy. I just think the way he presents it isn't good. I just think it's, he tries to be funny and it's not. He tries to overemphasize things in a way that makes it not sound really, he goes so far beyond that it's not exciting anymore.
Right.
And I think one of the challenges I also see is like, when they're doing the information for a stage, how do I put it? It's information you know was from the day before,
yeah.
Right? The review stuff.
Yeah.
And they try to make it sound like it's live.
Yeah.
Like, oh, and look, he just lost it there. You knew that. It happened yesterday.
Yeah.
Or it happened several hours ago.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't fit. It doesn't... It just doesn't quite work.
Yeah.
I mean, you've watched some of the older stuff from back in the 2000s, and we kind of discussed it just a little bit earlier, but I mean, that there, where they did kind of more of a story format,
yeah.
I thought was a lot better.
Yeah, I agree. And going back to John Desborough, I kind of wonder how much of that is him and how much of that is what's being fed to him, too.
Agree.
And,
yeah, it's not necessarily all his fault,
And I think, you know, whoever's producing these, you know, I think they're trying to create drama. They're trying to make it sensational, but it comes off as being a bit fake. You know, it comes off as being a bit, they're trying a bit too hard. And I agree with you. Rallying, the stories are there. You got to find them. The stories tell, like, there's enough drama out there if you're willing to go and dig and find the stories. And Martin Holmes talks about this a lot. You know, I think Martin talks about,
yep.
about trying to find, you know, the crazy weird stuff that happens on a road section between stages, or, you know, like that kind of stuff. That's where the drama is, and it's a little hard to find, but it's there. And I think the problem with WRC Plus and the broadcast is just it's become, they've been doing it the same way for a while, and I think that they're trying to convince you it's exciting rather than like they're telling you it's exciting rather than showing you that it's exciting.
Perfect
you know what
way
I mean?
Of putting it. Yes, I completely agree with that. That's actually the perfect description right there.
Yeah.
Is that they're trying to make me excited when the events themselves are exciting.
Yeah.
Let me figure out the excitement basically,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. But Red Bull TV, different. We had Mike Chen, which I think is what it should be.
Yeah.
His descriptions of things, his delivery, his knowledge, all of that, I thought was just great.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, so Mike and I think Matthew Wilson, I think that was a great combination, the two of those
yeah.
guys. They really clicked together, and it was good TV. I mean, both of them have been around the sport for a while.
Yeah.
Matt, obviously, you know, with his dad, with M Sport, and
it took him a couple of episodes to get comfortable. It seemed like,
yeah.
But once he got comfortable, and him and Mike just really kind of
something clicked.
Didn't
yeah.
They?
I thought I really enjoyed getting to hear some analysis and some discussion and a little bit of speculation, a little bit of what do you think's going on here? And
what we're all doing in our heads anyway.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. So it definitely. When I was watching those guys, especially, and the special guests, Mark Webber was great. I mean, he was the perfect guy.
Now, I'm going to differ with you on
that. Are you? Are you?
Yes, because now,
I thought he was great.
Now, I like Mark Webber. I
sure.
think he's a great personality
yeah.
and whatnot. But I kept seeing Mike Chen defer to Mark Webber for some details about the drive, and he knows nothing about rally.
Right.
And I thought that should have been reversed. I think Mark Webber should have been asking Mike Chen, who is the real expert, who knows the sport. And it just felt kind of weird, because Mark Webber usually didn't have a good answer.
Right. Yeah.
So I didn't like, as much as I like Mark Webber, I don't think he was the... They did it right. I think they just sort of reversed it a little bit.
Okay.
That Mark Weber should have been asking the Chen questions of Mike Chen, and I think it would have been a lot smoother.
All right. Yeah, I hear that. I hear that. I see what you mean by that, yeah. But yeah, I thought it was a good... I thought they did it... They still used a lot of the footage from WRC+.
They did.
But I thought they did it pretty cleverly with splicing in some analysis, some interviews. The graph... I mean, in terms of the presentation, the production value, I think it was pretty good with the graphics and like the 3D stages. Remember, they were doing the 3D stage... We're talking about the mid-2000s broadcast. They were doing that back in... the early to mid-2000s with Virtual Spectator, and that was really cool stuff. And then they got away from that. And,
yeah. It's like, and, wow, it's all new.
Yeah.
No, really, it's
yeah.
not.
But I hope Red Bull TV builds off of. I think 2017 was a really good first year. They proved what they could do. Mm-hmm. It was a breath of fresh air. But I think they do need to build off it now.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to see what they're gonna put out there this season.
So let's talk about the teams and the drivers.
Yeah.
Honestly, a season that is for the record books. I think we can all agree on that. A lot of firsts. A close championship for
yep.
the most part. Seven different winners
yeah.
For the season. I mean, what's not to like, to be honest? But you admittedly in your article ate a little humble pie when it came to Ogier.
Yeah. So yeah, Ogier. I won't say I was an Ogier hater, but you know the expression. Let me put it this way. I don't think Ogier really covered himself with glory in the way he acted all the time at VW. For me, I really struggled with the whining about. Or should I say whinging? How much of a UK
right?
audience do you have here?
I know I saw you write that. I'm like, oh boy, he's been to the UK a lot.
Whinging or whining, depending on where you're from, about the road position. And I don't know. For me, it just, when he was at VW, and perception is reality. I can only speak on what I saw. But he appeared to me pretty entitled, pretty...
You have the best car, the best team, the most money.
Yeah.
I mean... And you happen to be a top driver. And
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, yep, he's going to win again. Yep, he's going to win again. And yet the sport was trying so much stuff to try and penalize
and
him.
And I do get that.
Right?
And I think there's a lot of frustration there. And if I was in his position, yeah, I'd probably be saying the same
exactly.
things. You know what I mean? And I get that. But
now he goes to M Sport, the
yeah.
smallest of the teams, the lowest of the budget of the teams.
Yeah. And I think that's where... And I think I can speak for a lot of people and say... We got a new perspective of Ogier this season.
Agreed.
A more positive, a more personal perspective of Ogier this season. And yeah, I mean, we saw him frustrated with the situations. I mean, remember Corsica when the car lost its hydraulics? And
yeah.
I don't remember who was at the stage they interviewed him, but you know, he was. You could tell he was biting his lip.
Yep.
He wanted
short answers, not a lot of detail, and I'm out of here.
Yeah, you knew if he, you could tell that he knew that if he kept talking, he was going to get himself into a load of trouble because he was pissed. You know, he was pissed at the reliability of the car.
But that's also refreshing, right?
Yeah.
Because you know, with VW, he wouldn't have been like that.
Yeah.
Right. I think what we saw, just my opinion here, real quick, is that
yeah.
I think we saw Ogier move from the corporate environment. Of VW
yep.
to as everybody says, kind of the family environment.
Right.
And family has some infighting
yeah. yeah.
With M Sport, right? And I think that worked, at least, you know, from a publicity standpoint. I think that worked hugely in his favor and for all of us watching.
Yeah.
I think seeing that side of him, even when he was frustrated, but yet at the same time, doing everything he can to get the best result.
Yeah. That's the thing, and that's why I think we got a better perspective of Ogier. Is when he was frustrated this year, it wasn't whining. It was raw frustration, but also it was he channeled that in a way that he put his head down, and he went into the season. Throughout the season, he took what he could get when he got it. He made the most of the opportunities he had, and when he had bad luck, he was able to mitigate it better than anyone else. And instead of seeing him kind of whine and throw his hands in the air and like maybe we saw a little bit with the rogue position with VW, I think we saw him kind of just buckle down and accept, this is where I am, this is what we need to do. And I for one, got a really, my opinion of him changed a lot because of this season in a really positive way.
I have to agree with that. I mean, I was tired of him winning. I think what people like Colin Clark and a good friend of the show and others have been able to do, though, is whenever you saw him outside of a rally, he was a different Ogier. But there were rare instances because he really, you know, he had his job to do.
Yeah.
And he was very much about the job. He gets so serious and so determined when he's out there. You know, Loeb no different. But those moments where he caught him away from the sport and he got interviews and whatnot, it wasn't leading up to, you know, where he's doing pre-event testing, where he's serious again or whatever. If you got him, like, a little more relaxed and away from it, he was actually a really cool guy.
Yeah.
I think what really changed my opinion of Ogier, actually, was 2016 Poland, when he put Quintana on
right,
his shoulders.
Right, yeah.
I realized, and I've been hearing before that he's like a spokesman for all the drivers
right.
to the FIA.
Yeah,
he'll go to the organize to the FIA and say, look, you know, this isn't right. And it wasn't always selfish just about him at that point. I didn't realize that. Cause I always, like you, it's like, you know, here's the guy that's always the winner, blah blah blah. I mean, it's always going to be about him.
Yeah.
But no, actually, he was actually fighting for everyone.
Yeah.
He really was a leader for the sport as a whole, from a competitor standpoint. And I think what changed for me was Poland 2016.
Yeah.
And then from then on, I started kind of digging more into what he was like, and I'm like, okay, he's different from what I had perceived because
right.
of what little I did see of it before.
Yeah, yeah.
And M-Sport has just brought out the best in him.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, I mean, yeah. And moving on to, and yeah, I feel a bit unfair that we're talking mostly about his personality here, but let's talk about his results this season. I think he proved something to all of us, that he is the best guy out there. You know, for me, there was just a little bit of a shadow of doubt that, for example, I'm not a huge fan of Formula One, but we saw what happened to Vettel when he was in the best car, and then we saw what happened when he wasn't in the best car, right?
Yep.
So, you know, Ogier was in the best car, the best team, the best situation for the last 4 years. So I really had questions. I'm like, is he really as good as we think he is, or are we just seeing the performance of the car and the team? And I think
right.
he showed to me and to a lot of us that, no, he really...
Yeah, thank you.
He really is the best out there. And he's the guy that's going to win championships. And the way you win championships is... When you have the right car and the right day, you make the most of it. And when you don't, you still make the most of it. And you try to, you know, I use the word mitigate. Just try and mitigate the losses as much as you could.
Yep.
And I think Ogier did that to perfection this year. So, yeah. He proved something to me. I think he proved something to a lot of us.
I agree. You know, very consistent. Your favorite moment of 2017?
Favorite moment of 2017. All right.
In the WRC, anyway.
I'm going to... So this is interesting, because I didn't know that this had happened until long after it. But my favorite moment was Chris Meek on the power stage in Mexico, dumping the car off, driving through a car park. Jesus Christ, Chris! Paul Nagel on the intercom.
Yes.
Dragging the car out and finishing with a puncture and still winning the rally. I was actually standing on that stage, probably about a mile away from where that happened. So,
wow.
And when he came through, we were on the top of the mountain in on El Brinco was the stage, or it was a part of the El Brinco stage. I don't know.
They used part of it.
Yeah. And we were standing on top of the mountain, and he came through, and you already knew he had that rally pretty much in the bag. He didn't need to push.
Nope.
On that last stage, and he came through. We were on the inside of a turn, kind of standing up on a bank, overlooking. It was actually a beautiful view, but there's a big drop overlooking the mountains.
Yep.
And he came through that corner, just full chat. I mean, fully committed, big slide. As he went through, I'm like, man, he must be going for power stage points.
which kind of surprised me.
Right. You got this one in the bag. What do you need that for, right?
But, I mean, credit to him. So, and you know, he went past us, and yeah, that's the last we saw of him. And about a kilometer down the road, he had the car park adventure. We had no idea until I got back to our Airbnb in Guanajuato, and we pulled up the highlights. Actually, no, I actually started to see stuff on Twitter first.
Right.
I'm like, oh my gosh. I just saw, like, I looked at Twitter, and I saw the car, like, in a car park. And I'm like, oh my gosh,
wait,
what
happened?
Did he throw it off? Did he throw it all away? And then I started reading about it.
Chris Stanton.
Yeah, and then, you know, we started watching the highlights, and I was like, oh my gosh. And so, for me, it was my favorite moment, because I was there, but it was kind of strange. I was there, but I had no idea it happened until long after it happened. But then seeing it on the highlights, I don't know, that was, that moment kind of summed up Chris's season. If you could sum up Chris's season in one moment, that would be it. It was...
Completely agree there.
It was like absolute brilliance and just an absolute disaster kind of at the same time. That's my moment from 2017. How about yours?
That's definitely right up there. Honestly, it's several moments. My favorite, and it's just kind of been a consistent thing, is anytime they talk to Craig Green at the end of the stage and he's had a good stage, his enthusiasm for the sport and how he describes it, and it's just...
Oh my gosh, yeah.
I love Craig. I really do. I've been a huge fan of his ever since he won WRC Academy several years ago, and he's just been fun watching him grow. And he's he's almost like what you'd call like a journeyman driver. I mean, he's not somebody that had a whole bunch of money behind him or whatever. Obviously, had tragedy happen as well, and have him just keep working his way up to the level he's at. And it's been fun to watch that. Obviously, what happened in Wales with M Sport.
Yeah,
taking that championship.
That final stage on Brennig, you know.
Yeah,
that was a pretty cool moment.
How do you compare that really to anything? I mean, they're you kind of knew they had it in the bag from a manufacturing standpoint, but to win on one stage, first win for Elvin Evans, first win for DMAC, first win for M Sport in how long?
Yeah.
Right, and the first win of them as a standalone without them being Ford M Sport.
Yeah.
And then OGA getting his title all in one stage. I mean, just freaking phenomenal. Unfortunately, I think Evans got the short end of the stick because of everything else going on.
Yeah.
But that was big, too. But as far as anything, but again, as the weekend went on, you knew kind of what was going to happen there. And so that's why it's like, for me, it's hard to, other than the Chris Meek moment, I was just like, wow, right in your face at the last moment. I just say just some of those just little moments at the end of the stages where you're listening to an interview and you're like, yeah, that's what I love about this sport.
Yeah.
It's hearing somebody being passionate like that, like Craig Green does.
Yeah, that's exactly what I wanted to say. Like, so I think the reason Craig Green resonates with so many people, and I'm a huge fan of Craig Breen. He's the reason I decided on like 3 days' notice when I heard he was going to compete in the 2016 Circuit of Ireland Rally, and that was a real last-minute deal he threw together to get a car out there on that rally. I was like, I got to go see him on the Circuit of Ireland. But I think a lot of people, and I have all the time of day for Craig Breen because he loves the sport so much and it matters so much to him as someone, as a fan that loves the sport so much, to see a driver reciprocate that and just really appreciate where he is and not take it for granted, and show us, and this is like show don't tell me. You know, a lot of drivers say, oh, it's been a boyhood dream of mine. You know, that classic, you know, Pat phrase. You know, ever since I was a young child, I've wanted to be a rally driver. Well, Craig Breen, he doesn't just tell you that; he shows it. You know, like when he's at the end of a stage and he has a good stage, you know. This is his life. This is all he's ever cared about. And, you know, good on him. He's making it happen. So that's why I love Craig, and I think a lot of people do.
Yeah, definitely. If there's anybody else that's currently competing that I put similar to that, it's probably Latvala, who's also equally as passionate. Look at all the classic cars that he owns. He loves racing the historics. You know, he's definitely got that long-time passion as well.
Yeah.
But he, you know, when he gets in the car, he's more business.
Yeah.
And so you don't quite hear it necessarily at the end of the stages.
Yeah.
But but he definitely is that same big fanboy, I think. And again, not to say that other drivers aren't that way, they just don't show it,
right,
like you said.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Biggest mishap of 2017 in WRC. What do you think was kind of the, I mean, other than tragic stuff?
Right. Well, there's an obvious one. Citroën's entire season, right? I mean, so I think that's the obvious one.
They have the most time to develop a car. It was known, right? Because I mean, they took a season off to work on that car. And, you know, we saw all these clips of them testing. And for them to get it so wrong, it was odd.
Yeah. And it seemed like everything was in place. And I wrote about it at the beginning of the season. And I had to, foot and mouth at the end of the season. You know, I thought Citroën was going to win it all. You know, because they'd done this before with Loeb. You know, they took a year off to develop a new car. They developed it around their number one driver. So in 2006, they did it. Loeb competed with the Kronos team when they were developing the C4. And they came out, and that was the most dominant car from 2007 to 2010 with Loeb. So I really thought that, you know, given the same opportunity, and Chris given the opportunity for the first time in his career to have a car built around him, I thought because of the pace we saw in 2016, where he was able to go toe-to-toe with Ogier and beat him on outright pace, I thought with the right car that was developed around him, a year of testing, I thought they were gonna clean up, and it was a disaster. And the interesting thing about Citroën, though, is yes, that season was a disaster, but if you had said to them at the beginning of the season, you know, you don't have any information about the season, but you're going to win two rallies this season. I don't know. Would they have taken that? They still won two rallies. You know, they won Mexico and Spain.
I think they would have kept the wins, but I think just the consistently inconsistent controllability of the car would be what they, you know, would like to get back, right?
Yeah.
Because when he was in Sweden and he was wrestling with that damn thing, and, you know, the curse words frequently.
Yeah.
But you could just realize just how hard a car it was. It's like they built it so much on the edge that it had no wiggle room, I guess you could say, you know? The setup on it either was perfect or was way off.
Yeah.
It was just a huge pendulum swing.
Yeah.
There was no room in the middle. And when you either got exactly right and it was dominant, or it was way off the mark. And I think that's, maybe it's a balance thing. Maybe it's, you know, they've done a number of things. Suspension changes, differential, transmission change stuff. Obviously, they seem to get it more right towards the end of the year. But all that stuff should have been worked out, you would have thought, in all their testing. And, I think that was an interesting thing to see how, what seemingly, from a standpoint, from me, that it should have been that hard to get right when the cars were, yes, more powerful than the previous year, and yes, you got more aero bits. The only major technological difference, other than the aero and power, was the active center diff.
Yeah.
I had no idea it changed things that much, but apparently they also redesigned the car with the suspension and all that stuff around that.
Yeah.
And, wow, I didn't realize it was going to be that far off and that different.
And speaking about the active diff, if Citroën's the obvious choice for like the kind of the biggest disappointment this season, but I think the less obvious, or the kind of, I don't want to say, I'll give you my second. I don't want to steal yours if you have. Who's your biggest disappointment or your biggest?
My biggest disappointment was Neuville and Hyundai.
Neuville, okay.
His mistakes. He had it in the bag twice, you know, and made silly mistakes. Championship really was his.
Do you think Monte Carlo, like now that we saw, at first I thought Monte Carlo was a mistake. But then when we saw what happened in Germany, where he went on Panzerplatte, when he took a very innocuous cut and it ripped the rear wheel off, and then what we saw in Spain.
With all three cars?
Yeah. Obviously, we know Sweden, that's all Nuva. Like the super special, that was all on him.
That's true.
And when Monte Carlo, at first when he damaged the wheel of Monte Carlo, I was like, oh, Neuville, what are you doing? then going back, looking at how fragile that car was to the rest of the season, I'm beginning to wonder maybe that wasn't all on him in Monte Carlo. I don't know.
Well,
what do you think?
Monte Carlo, that was clearly actually there was a rock or cement drainage little ridge there.
Yeah.
And the wheel slid and hit that.
Yeah.
And ripped off that rear wheel. And any car at that velocity would have done the same thing if they went wide. So I think that one there was his mistake.
Yeah.
And so same with Sweden was definitely clearly
definitely,
his mistake.
Definitely, yeah.
I think... So I guess that would be my disappointment there. But yes, the fragility of the car definitely came out in both Germany. That was really an innocuous cut.
Yeah.
As was what happened to all of them in Spain. That was just like freakishly weird. How many other cars took that same cut in the same manner and were just fine?
Yeah, I mean, because you saw Tanak take it. And it did pop, like it threw the steering wheel out of his hands, but the car survived it. You know what I mean? But yeah, that was incredible. Yeah, that was incredible. That'd be another a big cock-up for the season. That in Spain, all three Hyundais going
right?
On the same corner, yeah. Yeah, I mean, for me, sorry, was there anything else you were going to say about Nuevo? I don't want to interrupt you.
That, and, you know, he's learning now, I think. It's taken him a little bit, but, you know, his temperament. He's got to learn to get that under control.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can understand with the pressure of the team. I think the way he performed the last couple events to kind of build back the team continuity, I think having Mikkelsen on the team with him is probably going to be a help. Not only are they good friends, but they're good competitors with each other. I think he needs someone to push him on the team.
Yeah.
And Sordo and Padden aren't going to push him.
No. Padden was the guy I was going to talk about, and then we know what happened, like we talked about on the first stage. And as a driver, I don't know how you come back from that in terms of confidence. So, but he just could not get his head around that active center diff.
Yeah.
The whole season, and I really thought this was going to be. So what this season was for Elvin Evans and Oit Tanak is what I thought this season was going to be for Hayden Padden.
I see.
I thought this was going to be a season where he started, we know he's fast, he's already gotten, he won his first rally in Sardinia, so he's got that out of the way. I thought we were going to see a real good building year out of Hayden Padden. I thought this was going to be his year where he was going to put himself up there as one of the stars of the future, and it just didn't happen for him. Like, he just couldn't, I don't know what it was, but there were times where, you know, it looked like, for me, Hayden Padden's season, the picture, the image I have of Hayden Padden's season was in Sardinia on the live stage where I think he punctured or damaged suspension. And you could tell just the way he was throwing that car around, and then he, you know, the tire just started flailing.
Oh, that.
Ripped the car, but the car caught on fire.
And he kept trying to take it.
Yeah, and he just
and
throwing
he's just
the
going
car
on,
around.
Just like, oh, you poor guy.
And you could just see the body language of the car, how frustrated and how, like, I think desperate would be the word I would use to describe the way he was driving that car. And you could just tell, like, he had lost it, like, at that point. And he just never really got it back this season. I'm glad he's still going to get a chance to get some rallies. I hope that Hayden Padden doesn't go the way of, you know, like a Chris Atkinson. You know, a guy who has so much potential. But had a bad year with a bad car and kind of tanked his WRC career. I hope we don't see that, Hayden. I hope that this year upcoming, I hope he can just put 2017 behind him and make 2018 that building year that he should have had in 17. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. So let's talk about rallying in the USA.
Yeah, Chris Atkinson.
GRC.
Yeah, we can talk about that too, actually. If you want to talk about what rallying means. So U.S. rallying.
What's your, I guess, just general thoughts on 2017? We had, you know, American Rally Association made their debut. Rally America actually brought in three new rallies.
Yeah.
With Southern Ohio, Colorado, and that Wyoming one.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's more rally, which is good.
Yep.
Unfortunately, there were some events that we had schedule conflicts. I say we in that, you know, I've done stuff for ARA, so
right.
I'm not, you know, strategically aligned anyway, either
right,
or.
Right.
But you know, my local event does do ARA, so that's kind of been my focus and what I've been involved with. So I know I enjoyed the stuff that I got to do this year, which was completely unexpected.
Yeah.
I had no idea I was going to be doing that. And it turned out to be a lot of fun. Being able to experience all those different rallies was great.
Yeah.
The competition at the front between Pastrana and Higgins was top notch.
It's the best it's ever been between those two guys, really.
And, you know, I thought, I mean, I want to see more people up there competing, but it was great to see a new car in Barry McKenna and bringing that S2000 turbo.
Yep.
Was
it S2000? Okay.
Yes. It's an S2000 chassis.
I think it was R5. Okay.
Nope. It is not. A lot of people get that misnomer.
Yeah.
It is not an R5. The first true R5 comes this year, in 2018. But the, an R5 did compete once as a one-off in New England.
That's Ron and Lagerman, right?
Yep.
M Sport brought a car over.
They did.
Yeah.
They brought it over, trying to draw interest.
Didn't do well.
No, they ripped the wheel off it.
Yeah.
And whatnot.
They didn't really get to show it. I think,
exactly.
Yeah, I think he damaged it early, right?
Yep.
The first couple stages, yeah.
So, but I mean, aside from that, I mean, I thought they showed what they wanted to do. The tracking, I thought, was a good idea. You know, again, this is my personal opinion, but, you know, you tell me what you think. And again, like I said, more rallies happening with the competition between Rally America and ARA. Maybe that's a good thing in some respects. It's pushing them both to do more. I don't know. But
yeah.
It seemed like there was a lot more rally going on than I've seen in years past.
I agree. I got to put my hand up and be honest and say I'm over the years, I've become a bit disillusioned with U.S. Rally. And other than my local event, SCPR, which I kind of volunteer doing some medical stuff for, through the years off and on, and watching Subaru Launch Control over the years, I hadn't really followed Rally America or US Rallying that much, just because at the end of the day I wanted to see the top guys, I wanted to see the top cars, I wanted to hear about the sport, and I just wasn't hearing about the sport either from Rally America. And so, because number one, I have a real life and a job that I got to worry about. Number two, I have rallying is kind of my first love, but I have other motorsports that I follow as well. Because Rally America really wasn't putting it out there in my face on social media and stuff like that, and didn't really have any kind of a TV package, and I just kind of stopped paying attention for a few years. So this, and I think a lot of people in the States may have felt that way, and I think it was time for American rallying to have a shakeup. I think we needed a shakeup. And that's why I started paying attention this year, because of the whole, the ARA, and I think, I'll be honest actually, I paid attention to very little Rally America this year. Almost none.
You know, they still followed, unfortunately, some of their tradition of it was hard to follow.
Yeah.
Their stage results would come up many... Well, heck, they have their server down for 2 months or something like that.
Yeah.
So you couldn't even look at results. And the results happening, you know, coming up 3 hours later or whatever. You know,
yeah.
That. Southern Ohio was the exception. They actually used Easy Track there. And because I had Ian, who's, our normal co-presenter here, was competing in that one, I was watching pretty closely.
Yeah.
So I'd say that was probably the one I was watching the closest. But it also had the advantage of having some sort of live coverage,
yeah.
Right? At least of knowing what the stage time is.
Yeah. Which we're going to have to see more of if rallying is going to grow or succeed in the States. I think what intrigued me about the ARA is... Okay, it didn't always work out all the time, but they tried a lot of new stuff. I mean, they were pretty ballsy in their first season to not only start a new championship, but try a lot of stuff that hasn't been tried before here in the States in terms of how to follow the rally and, you know, the live tracking and the live times, you know. So I paid more attention to the ARA, and I think the other thing is I don't know where U.S. rallying would be without Subaru. And
and what they've done with like launch control and stuff like that. In terms of activation,
they're a huge support, aren't they?
If it wasn't for that program, I wouldn't have seen much any footage of rallying in the States. You know what I mean? So I think I hope they stay in it for a long time because we need more of that. The only thing I'd love to see with I'd love to see the launch control concept expanded out to more than just Subaru. Of course, Subaru isn't going to do that, you know. They're in it for their marketing, but going back to talking about broadcasting, that's the way the story of rally needs to be told. You know, I think if the WRC went that way, with kind of telling, showing some behind-the-scenes stuff and kind of telling the story more, that's kind of what we need in rallying. But, I mean, but it was a great season for the ARA. I think it was a really good first season. I think they proved something to all of us that they could pull it off. And I think they did a good job. Did it have its issues? Yeah. I mean, Pierce Nage, I think they'll admit, and that's probably why they're not going back there this year. It was a good idea, I think, to start with an established rally, with an established sanction. I think it was a really good idea to start that way. But it definitely had its issues. Dealing with two different sanctioning bodies, two different sets of priorities trying to run the same rally. You know, it didn't necessarily work out great, and I think that's why they're not going back. But it was a good idea to start the season that way. But then they also, they did a good job of going with tried and true events. I mean, Oregon Trail, from the outside, you're on the inside. From the outside, it looks like the best organized rally, I think, in the States. I don't know what you think, but from someone that's on
every
the outside.
Every rally I've ever been to, at the last minute, there's always a bunch of stuff that messes up.
Right.
But the fact that we gave that impression means we're doing a good job.
Yeah,
so
exactly. And I think that's it. Like, it comes across as very polished. But I think the ARA did a good job of going with established events. You know, STPR, it's been around for forever. Oregon Trail, how long has that one been going on for?
Consistently since 1996.
Yeah.
Well, 97. 96 was going to be the first event, but we had massive floods that year, and that ended up canceling, so they did their first event in 97. It's been running every year ever since.
Yeah. Maine Forest, I mean, that's an event that's been going on a while. Ojibwe?
Yeah, Ojibwe.
I mean, that's an established event, so I think they did a really good job of going with what they knew, and I think because they went with some established events, they were able to try some of this other new stuff, and I think they pulled off pretty well. I think once again, they got through that first season. Now it's the sophomore album. You know, it's the second year. We'll have to see how they can build off that.
So, I guess kind of looking at 2018, what do you want to see
from the ARA?
From American rallying, yeah. Let's start with American, then we'll talk about WRC.
So, I want to see...
Actually, let me put it this way. This is a question I've been asking on my podcast pretty regularly. You maybe have heard it. You know, it's... If there's one thing that you could do, you know, kind of the blank check question, that we could do in general as a rally community or whatever, if you have the reins to, you know, to be able to control what was happening, what do you think we could do to improve the sport? I mean, do we need better competition, better media, like a TV package? Do we need in the competition side, like you're talking with about homologation with one of the competitors? Do we need to make it cheaper, no matter what, and then keep the rules more open so they can build anything? But that's so the competition might not be there, but you'd have more cars, cater more to manufacturers and sponsors. What if we could do something? What do you want to see?
So I'm going to go along the competition homologation route. I think I would love to see...
That's what Dylan Van Way seems to think.
Okay.
He thought that was a better route to go because with homologation, you know, it kind of forces a standard and a level of competition.
Yeah, and I think we need to, in America, I think I would love
to... at a high cost.
Right. And that is the key. I would love to see America... I think America has some of the best rallying roads in the world that no one knows about. And I think I would love to see American rallying seen as a destination for more international drivers, as an actual legitimate place to learn your trade and hone your trade. And at the moment, I don't think that's the case. Yes, we have David Higgins. You know, he's kind of the guy that's made a name for himself in America.
Right.
But other than a few, I'd like to see more guys from Europe, some more, maybe some more R5. But let's be honest, there's not many R5 cars that are sold in the States. You know,
right.
There's no VW Polo, there's no Skoda Fabia, there's no Hyundai i20. I just said Hyundai. Oh my gosh. There's no Citroen DS3, or now C3.
Right.
So, but I would love to see some more top-class European teams. I'd like to see America become more of a destination for international teams, not just U.S.-centric. Because I think that's the only way you're going to develop young American talent, is to get them some good competition. I think... So, I don't know if you've ever talked to Crazy Leo.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he was... I think he's a perfect example of what being sheltered in the North American rallying scene can do to you. He's a really good rally driver. You know, he does a really good job with very little in Canada.
Right.
And he spent a season in, was it JWRC or Drive DMAC? Can't remember.
It was Drive DMAC.
Drive DMAC. And I think that was an eye-opening experience for him in terms of the budget, in terms of the experience, in terms of the pace of these guys, these young guys. And I think the only way for North American rallying to kind of put some talent out there is we need to get some better competition and get them out of the North American shelter. So it's either create a way to send them over there, which we really don't want to see because we want to keep them here.
Right.
So I think the answer is we need to bring some competition
over here.
Yeah, and I think cost is a big issue, but getting American rallying regulations a bit more on par with what the rest of the world is doing might make that happen. I don't know.
Yeah, see, I mean, this kind of goes into, you know, we talk about other motorsports that we follow, and America always likes, North America in general, tends to like to go its own way.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And a lot of it's because, you know, just the way grassroots stuff runs, you don't have... Unfortunately, motorsport racing doesn't have the following that it does in Europe.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to anything but NASCAR, it seems. You know, and it's always been tough.
Yeah.
And so to kind of encourage that that continuation in the sport, you know, has been a big focus on making sure it's open enough that you can get these garage tuners to be able to, you know, build whatever they want, and that means more open rules, and what I mean, obviously, minus safety. Safety is always going to be a concern, but it's a tough sell to go the homologation route. But yet, on the same side, on the flip side of that, you've got, you know, if you can create clear, defined classes based on homologation, you can create like a ladder system maybe and help grow it. But you need sponsors to back that with that cost.
Yeah.
And so how do you draw in the sponsors then, right? So it's got kind of a chicken and egg thing,
yes.
Right? Because
yes.
The sponsors won't come unless there's people following it and people competing in it. They won't come. And, yeah, anyway.
Yeah.
So it's hard to figure out where to start from. But, you know, on a similar note, I mean, we do have some new cars coming in 2018.
Yeah.
Dave Wallingford's bringing the R5. It's already here. He's testing it. His first event will be WRC Mexico, right? First USA event is going to be Oregon Trail.
Nice.
And so we're really excited to see that. I don't know if you heard the recent news, but I think it's Andrew Hawkswood in New Zealand is bringing an AP4 car.
See, that's an interesting concept.
Do you know, understand what AP4 is?
I know a little bit about it, and I think that's a really clever solution of what they're doing down there, saying, okay, well, R5 isn't really what we're looking for, but we want to create... I really do think that the U.S. should kind of go that route with their open class.
Right. Now AP4, though, is not homologated. It's not FIA.
I know. Yeah.
Right?
I know.
The neat thing is that you are having FIA events allowing non-FIA cars compete again.
Yes.
Right? That allowed you to see more than just 12 cars down in Mexico.
Correct.
Which was a little frustrating, I'm sure.
Yeah.
You know, was it 2016 and 2015? There was so few competitors.
Yeah.
Because the rule said FIA homologated cars only. And then you lose all your
group N cars that have been around, and you know,
right, exactly.
All, yeah.
So now they've lifted that. That definitely opens up things. But so I guess that for part of that is allows North American drivers to compete maybe down something in Mexico and see how they rate against some of those. Granted, most of those will be homologated people, but you kind of rate kind of where you are as a driver, maybe. But but AP4 is definitely neat. There's some select specific chassis that you can choose from, and from those chassis you just kind of have a plug-in internals of engine transmission, right? I think it's Evo stuff, if I thought I heard correctly.
Okay.
But it's a common platform,
yeah.
Right? So you decide to build a Mazda 2, you decide to build a Hyundai i20 version or whatever, and
that Mazda 2, by the way, I think that's the coolest looking car.
Isn't it neat?
Yeah.
But I mean, you buy the chassis, you cage it, you know, gut it and cage it, and then you order from one of these select suppliers the engine and transmission stuff, and it's pretty much standardized, right?
Yeah. I think it's a really good solution because that appeals to like the garagista kind of fabric of American rallying, where, you know, I think that allows that to happen, so it doesn't kill that with a bunch of manufacturer or big spending type stuff.
It
still allows that to take place, and that's what makes up the fabric of North American rallying.
And they can choose their own suspensions, I believe, choose their own brakes, choose their own tires, right. Blah blah blah. It's not 100%. You have to follow just this thing, right?
Yeah. So that's a really interesting concept that I'd like to see maybe a little bit more of in North America.
Well, from what he posted on their Facebook page, they put in that they're planning on doing Oregon Trail and doing Olympus and maybe Rally Idaho. So the western region of the U.S.
Yeah.
is a spot they're looking to possibly compete. So I would love to see that, especially against the R5 of Wallingford, to see kind of where it slots in.
Yeah.
I mean, we saw a little bit of that in Australia, WRC Australia. Until Brendo and Rhiannon binned it.
Yeah.
But they were right there.
Yeah.
Now, granted, the only car out there that was an R5 was Kaylee Bravo
Pera,
and
yeah.
That was his first time ever there, so yeah. You don't know what to think yet.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think that's a good step forward. I'd put kind of equal to that would be, sorry for the noise here, Fatella's prototype car or whatever, a similar concept. He's got that Ford Fiesta, but it's got the innards of an Evo in his car. Not too unlike the Mitsubishi Mirage that we've got with Art Grushka.
Yeah.
So we get more of these kinds of things, are more modern cars. They look good. They perform extremely well on the stages. You know, we got to make sure reliability's there. That's definitely a big thing, as always is in endurance sport. We know that. But I think that is something that will draw in more people to be interested in it.
Absolutely.
I think we can eventually see that playing field maybe level off in being good close competition in those kinds of cars.
Yeah, and that's why I kind of lost interest for a few years in American rallying is I don't want to travel halfway across the country and see David Higgins, Travis Pastrana go by and then a bunch of kind of mediocre entries. You know, if I'm going to spend my money to go travel, I'm gonna go to Ireland to see a bunch of XWRC cars, or I'm gonna go to a WRC event, and so I think you're absolutely right. I think American rallying needs some more of that to get some more modern, some more higher pace cars out on the stages. So it's not just the Super USA guys, and then not much else.
Right, right. Well, and they're getting more of a penalty this year. They're moving to sounds like a three-tier system, from what I've heard.
Are they only giving them free tires this year? what they limit them? Like 10 tires they limited to for the entire rally?
I think last year it was 12. I think this year it'll be 12, not 10. I can't remember, something like that.
But yeah,
it's going to be... So even more tire limitation. And to be honest, most everybody else, minus the McKenna maybe, is going to be going to a rally, and whatever tires they've got, they're going to use all rally and then the next rally.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Tires aren't cheap, but they're not manufacturers, you know, they're privateers.
Yep.
And I mean, that does help level the playing field somewhat. They'll probably have a weight penalty or a restrictor penalty as well. So that definitely holds them back a little bit, but still, you're talking about a manufacturer team.
Yeah.
You know, they're gonna, and the experience of Higgins and how he can maintain that momentum through the corners, it's I mean, he's still going to probably win it, but, you know, it's fun to challenge him. Yeah. I'll say that, you know, as much as it frustrates him. You know, right. He thinks that, you know, everything should be open and equal or whatever, and fine, bring some competition for him.
Yeah.
And by holding them back a little bit, it may be allowing, let's say, a McKenna the 2-liter motor that's actually in the Fiesta R5 used by Wallingford. It's not the 1.6.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to have a bigger restrictor, allowing them a little more power, maybe. And, you know, I mean, he's not nearly the same quality of driver, but at least you can get a little more competition out of it.
Right, and at least having a chance is what's going to entice these other entries to come in.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at all. You look at kind of another rabbit trail. You look at LMP1 sports cars this year, right?
Right.
Coming up. All of a sudden, now that Audi and Porsche are gone, now we're starting to see a bunch of privateers, like, for the first time, have a legitimate... They saw what happened at Le Mans this year with basically every LMP1 hybrid, you know, an LMP2 car almost won Le Mans.
Yeah.
So now there's an incentive for privateers to take an LMP1 car to Le Mans because they got a chance, you know?
Yep.
And I think it's... They don't necessarily, you know, going back to rally, they don't need to necessarily be on equal, completely equal. You'll never be on completely equal footing with Subaru USA as a manufacturer team, but at least to give these privateers, like, a bit of a sniff that, okay, at least I might have a chance. If something goes wrong, if they get a puncture, have a little bit of reliability trouble, I might be in the fight. That's going to get more entries out there, I think.
Right. So let's talk about 2018 with WRC. Developments there have mostly been driver changes. Obviously, more development of the cars. Is there something in specifically that excites you there?
I really want to see what Andreas Nicholson can do this year. I think it's ridiculous that it just... And it's not. It's just.
How did he get the short straw?
Exactly.
Right?
How do you win the last rally of the season, going into the off season, and finish? I guess he finished third. He finished like a point behind Neuville in 16, or it was pretty close. How do you win the last rally of the season, finish third in the championship, and not get a ride next year? You know. So the fact that he started the season without a WRC ride just boggled my mind.
Yeah.
And I really knew, like, I actually wrote about it in kind of my. Where I stuck my neck out a little bit at the beginning of the season saying some bold predictions for 2017. I said, at some point, he's going to be in someone else's car by the end of the season. That's exactly what happened. He was actually in a couple people's cars,
yeah,
right?
He was.
You know, so, but he definitely proved this year that he's still got it. And I'm really curious to see how he does with Hyundai. And I'm curious to see how it's going to play out with him and Neuville.
Yeah.
Is there going to be a number one? Are they going to be... Is a number one? Okay, so right now they say we're going into equal status, but
yep.
As the season plays out, is a number one going to begin to emerge? And I got to be honest, between Neuville and Mikkelsen, in terms of a championship run, I'm going with Mikkelsen. I really am, for the reasons that you talked about with Neuville. For some reason, Thierry still sometimes can't keep it on the islands. Like, sometimes he loses his way a bit, and I think Andreas is much more level-headed. He's going to be more consistent, but he's also fast. We saw that with the Hyundai in Spain, right? Wasn't he leading after day one in Spain?
Yes, he was.
Yeah. And also, we saw him in the
Citroen
in Germany do it pretty good. So,
yeah.
We know that he's a great driver,
yep.
But he also can get his head around, he's not going to have the Hayden Patton problem. He can get his head around these active diffs and these new cars. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see how it plays out between him and Neuville. But I'd put my money on Mikkelsen for next season.
Ooh, well, gosh, it's so hard to predict. I think M-Sport's best shot was the first year with a new homologation and getting it right.
Yeah.
I think everybody else knows where their faults are and now have the off-season to make up for it, so I think it's going to be closer than ever.
Yep.
I think we get to watch. Really got to watch out for Toyota, though.
Yeah.
I think that car, when it was reliable, was right up there on at least the faster events. And they're known for speed, obviously, in Finland. But yeah, I think that car would definitely be one to watch out for. I think Latvala has really wrapped that team around him. He's got the support mentally now, as well as again, as long as the car can hold up. He didn't seem as deflated.
No.
Frustrated, but not deflated.
Yeah.
You know, when things bad would happen. But you can never, ever count out Ogier.
No, because, no, you can't.
And I think what pointed that out the most to me was in Wales, when they were on that fog stage, and he had brakes that broke. Brake fluid gone.
Yeah.
Right? He had no brakes at the end of that damn stage. It was one that wasn't televised or anything.
Yeah.
And he pulled over, and he's getting underneath the car and working on it. Fixed it up to where he had three brakes, I think, working.
Yep.
And then, but yet, even say where he lost his brakes, he was still not too far off from everybody.
Right.
And I think on the very next stage, even with only three brakes, he finished within, 5 seconds of Evans or something like that. I mean, he was, right there.
Yep.
I mean, that just showed his commitment and how much he's going to push for victory. I don't know. I mean, how many other people would have been just like, I'm just going to tippy-toe my way.
Yeah.
I'm you know, too scared, whatever. Yeah.
The other thing about that story that proved to me about Ogier is that he's got the mind games down. So no one knew. He did not let on about the brake problem until
that's
the
true.
End. So, and I think he knew that if he did, and how hard is that to control your emotions when, you know, that kind of situation, it's dark, you're in the middle of Wales, the fog is drifting in and out, that's hard enough, right? And then you have no brakes and you're just worried about losing time and you're getting frustrated. How hard is it to kind of keep that within you at the end of a stage, an interview, and just kind of keep that to yourself, even though you're frustrated and you want to put it out there, this is why my time wasn't what it should have been, to keep that to himself, drive away, no one really knew he was working on the car of his competitors, go out there, and once again, that's what I talked about, mitigating the bad situations.
Yep.
He did it to perfection in 2017, and I think you're absolutely right, that's why you can never count him out, because when things don't go his way, he's still going to make something out of it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, consistency is king. One thing I keep saying again and again is this is an endurance sport. And you mentioned IMSA, WEC, and whatnot earlier, and it's no different from that, which actually puts me into another topic, is Mohonen's comments. Jarmo Mohonen, who's no longer with WRC, and
thank
his
goodness.
Statements before he left, saying that he thinks stages should be no more than 6 miles long. It's basically taking what David Richards said to the 10th power and saying how this should be nothing but a series of sprints. Obviously, it's wanting to make it more TV friendly, but is nothing but live fitting it into these short little tiny sprints what we really want for TV, or do we want the stories?
Yeah.
Because to me, WEC has proven again and again that, I mean, okay, yeah, it's not a huge market for endurance racing and watching, but it is what makes it special and unique.
Yeah.
And putting together a series of what are essentially rally sprints and putting them together does not make a rally championship.
Right.
It's supposed to be hard. There's supposed to be long stages. One of the stages that he actually pointed out that he said was a failure was when they did that 58-kilometer massive stage in Mexico, 2016.
Yep.
And he thought that nobody watched it. BS.
Yeah.
I was listening to that stage intently. Why? Because that is when time is going to be won or lost.
Right.
This is where the most difference can be gained or lost on a stage. You get a puncture. The greatest thing that WRC did in the last 5-6 years, other than the new homologation rules, which I'm really behind, was getting rid of onboard split times.
Yeah.
And without the onboard split times and having a long stage, they have to guess. And this moves into why I want to talk about this, because you were mentioned about Ogier not letting on.
Yeah.
Because they don't know if somebody's crippled in that stage.
Yep.
And you have to make your own decision on how much you're going to push your limit.
Exactly.
And I think that is what makes it so exciting.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so
the only reason that stage, quote unquote, failed, that stage should have been run on the first day, not on the last day.
Agreed.
At that point, There wasn't much to push for across the leaderboard, if I recall correctly. I think the gaps were big enough that that there wasn't any real perceived benefit to taking the risk to push hard over those 80 kilometers. If that was in the first day, I think we would have seen a lot more drama, a lot more action. I think because it was on the third day, a lot of guys were just taking it easy and waiting for the power stage at the end of the rally. Mm-hmm. That's the only problem. Other than that, it wasn't the length of the stage. It was just kind of where it was placed in the rally.
Agreed. And you know, from a organizer standpoint, it definitely was a bit of a challenge for them in that they, because it was such a long stage, they had to position multiple emergency vehicle locations.
Right, yep.
Because of the amount of time they got to get to somebody. So halfway through, they had to have an entrance and had to have multiple zero cars, you know, doing different halves of the stage to manage that. But that's doable. You just have to have enough volunteers to run it. Yeah. And I think that was a bit of a challenge, stretching the volunteer base that they had for marshalling.
Well,
but,
about
if,
Mexico,
but if you can overcome that, you know, that little bit, I think that we should have more stages like that. I think every rally, and this is something that, thankfully, Jean Todt, the head of the FIA, has said, is that, you know, we need to have more of the longer rallies. And I know at least every event tries to have at least a 35-kilometer one, or something, you know, one of some... like, they used to call it something like special, I think, like an enduro stage or something like that. I remember they had a name for it when they started kind of talking about that. And I think that, yes, every event should have one, but again, at the beginning of the rally, not at the end.
Right, right. So, what do you want to see in 2018? What's I'm going to throw that question back. What's
in the WRC?
Let's just say it could be WRC or American Rally. Like, what's the one thing you want to... One thing you could change, the one thing you want to see in 2018 to improve the sport, what would you say?
Oh, gosh, you're going to ask me now.
Yeah, throwing it back.
I think for me, as a fan, when it comes to American rallying, I would like to see the coverage be something like launch control for American rallying as a whole. And because I think we have the interesting stories... some good content. I think it'd be drawing more sponsors. Lord knows we need more of those. And I think continuing on the, in the effort that's been going on, if we help teach the drivers and teams how to be on camera, this is something I had to learn.
Sure.
I have zero experience. But I feel like I improved as the season went on.
Sure.
And I feel like the drivers improved as the season went on. I mean, you've got David Higgins, who's already experienced, you know, obviously doing longer. Travis Pastrana, he's just a natural. You can just talk to him.
Yeah.
You just give him a subject and just let him go.
Yeah.
You know, but I think I saw more and more as I was interviewing people over the season that they got more comfortable with it. And with that same comfort level, I think gives them maybe the ability to maybe reach out to sponsors and try and help back their season.
Absolutely.
And I think help grow the sport there. So I guess that's kind of what I want to see. I think if we move towards having something like that, similar to what Canada does, which the same guys that do, you know, do launch control, you know, do the Canadian series.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yep.
That's pretty cool.
And I would like to see that kind of thing. I think that would be good for North American rallying. Because, yeah, unless you're watching, you know, the live streams on Facebook that we do, which, again, I've had a ton of fun with those.
Yeah, those are pretty cool.
But, I mean, I think and live content is definitely huge. But I think we need to have definitely go to that next step and get it to where it's a... If it's not on a TV, which I don't know about how successful that will be because TV's so finicky.
Yeah.
That's really kind of it for me.
Cool.
So,
cool.
Yeah, I did hear rumors, though, that there's going to be potentially more live stuff that WRC Plus is going to do.
Always good.
Considering it automatically renewed on me, that means that I end up paying an extra
$10. You're in then.
Yeah, so I'm already in.
For better or worse.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, so excited to see what 2018 brings.
Cool. Yeah, me too.
Well, you know, we should close this out. I've got to pay our bill and go get my car, which is about due for parking.
Gotcha, yeah.
Huge thanks for Jason Anthony for joining us. Remember, you can read his stuff on worldrallyblog.com, and they're on Facebook and on Twitter. And don't forget to follow us as well. Openpaddock.net is our website. Rate us on iTunes. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter, all that jazz. Thanks, everybody, for listening. This is Open Paddock, the Rallycast. Again, Jason. Well, any last words?
Just thanks for having me. It's brilliant to get to connect with another rally enthusiast in the States, and I think this is what we need more of in the sport, is people that love the sport finding each other, talking about it, and getting other people involved. So this is what we need. So thanks for taking the time.
Well, thanks for seeking me out while you're just vacationing through Portland. This is great. Enjoy the city. We have a great rally out here, so, you know, if you're around in April.
Yep. it's on my bucket list.
All right. Cheers, man.
Cool. Thanks.
Bye.